Recording stopped.
Okay, we're going to call the meeting to order. Are we all set, Mary?
Just about.
Okay. Come here.
Recording in progress.
What's that? No, they're turned on. Mary came out and turned them on. Just to put the audio. What's that? That's a good question. I had thoughts. Okay, thanks, Mary. Okay, we're going to call a meeting to order. We'd like to do our respect and acknowledgement declaration. We'd like to begin by acknowledging that the land on which we gather is the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe and the Mississauga people. So roll call. I'm Mayor Peter Hopkins.
Councillor Morley Haskin.
Councillor Mike Heckinen.
Councillor Regmark.
Councillor Nick Ryland.
Ina Watkinson, Clerk Administrator.
Attorney General Ocean Cantia.
Chris Bordolo, Chief Building Official.
Okay, thank you. Are there any declarations of conflict of interest? I have one, and I declared it in writing for point 9.1 of the agenda.
I have one for 11.2 of the agenda.
Fill out a declaration form. Doing it now. There we go. All right, that's fine. 7.2. Yes, okay. There we go. So we have an addition to the agenda. We have an addition to the agenda, so it's resolution 22213. Be resolved that the Council of Township of Keller is hereby approved the agenda for the meeting as amended, adding the following item, correspondence for consideration, 13.7, which is the MLCA requesting an update on plans to address short-term residential rentals and boat launch issues. I need a mover and a seconder, please. Councillor Ryland? Councillor Haskin? Any discussion? Call a question, all in favor? Carried, thank you. Okay, we have three delegations today. The first one is going to be from our Lake Stewardship and Environmental Committee, and the chair is Jennifer Gent Fuller. So I'm going to turn it over to her. And
good evening. Thank you very much for allowing me to speak. One of the projects that the Lake Stewardship and Environmental Committee is developing are butterfly gardens. One of our members said in the fall that this would be a really good initiative, and so a couple of people stepped forward that they wanted to work on that. As I'm sure you're aware, pollinating insects are threatened as so much of their habitat is being developed, and also there are a lot of insecticides in use. On the land. And so many groups across Canada are replanting plants that support the local native pollinating insects. What our plan is for this year to start talking about it and start people thinking about whether or not they could have a butterfly garden in on their land or look after one somewhere else. And then next year we hope to start actually helping people plant a pollinator garden. And so one of the things that we've come across is the lexicon of butterfly garden. People, when you use the term garden, they think of something that's very organized and has nursery plants and that kind of thing. And so a lot of places, including the Georgia Bay Biosphere, have started using the term pollinator patch. And that's what we're going to be doing, because when we use the term garden, we think of, we weed the garden. And the things that we want to put in the pollinator patches are the things that mainly that you would be pulling out of your garden. So calling it a garden leads to some expectations that probably aren't there for pollinator patches. And so that's one of the things that we're doing. So we wanted to try to plant some areas this summer in order to start these growing. The idea of a pollinator patch is that you have things that bloom in the spring, things that bloom in the summer, things that bloom in the fall, and you have varying heights. So there's always something there for the pollinating insects and always something that catches the eye for people looking at it. And so what we are hoping for is permission from the Township Council to use areas on Township property to plant pollinator patches. We have one butterfly garden, if you will, here at the community center. There was some misunderstanding about who's supposed to look after it, but we're getting that straightened out. But we do want to plant on Township property and with consultation with the staff as to where would be the ideal places, what size they would be. We don't want to run into difficulties of, where the grass gets cut and that kind of thing. But we do want to institute this in McKellar. And so I'm suggesting a motion, move that the Lake Stewardship and Environmental Committee be permitted to plant pollinator gardens on Township property in consultation with Township staff as to the placement and size of such gardens. And that's my suggestion for a motion. Thank you very much.
Before you go, there might be some questions.
Okay.
Are there any questions from anybody?
Yeah,
from council?
Yeah, as
Hope from council.
Council.
Oh, sorry.
Right. I'll just make a comment, Jennifer. I'm really glad you came because my lawnmower, when it broke down, and I ended up with a really messy looking lawn. But all of a sudden, because I didn't mow it for a while, you know, all the weeds were coming up and everything, but I got all sorts of butterflies and bees coming and everything. And it was quite joyful. But I'm glad to see that it's not a messy lawn. It's a pollinating patch now, we can call that. So.
And that's exactly one of the ideas that is promoted in the environmental movement, if you will, is just do nothing. Have an area of where you would normally mow and just ignore it and see what happens. Mm-hmm. And it's called a no-mow area, so you're right in tune with the current thing.
Okay.
I wanted to mention, too, that MLCA is also interested in this, so I expect that we'll be working together with them also.
Any other questions? Mr. Zulak, did you have a question?
Yeah, so you intend to put milkweed in those gardens?
Absolutely.
So if that's an invasive species to Ontario Hill, it's dangerous to livestock. The monarch butterflies eat it to get the toxins, so when the birds eat them, the birds vomit. It's no good to have your livestock. If pasture fields are the years of drought, the livestock will eat it, and they'll get sick or die. I've had one myself eat it, and its eyes are swollen up, face swollen up. Now, it's not anybody's fault, but that's just the reality. livestock and milkweed don't go together. Orchids or anything should be nowhere near any park, milkweed. Just look it up yourself. It's all the facts are there.
Absolutely. We'll certainly follow the science on that.
I'm sorry?
We'll certainly follow the science. That's what our aim is. We have two scientists on our committee, and that's where
somebody
we
are. Somebody else, when Mike Corson was on the committee and others prior to that, I showed the documents to him, and they let that go.
Anyway, I'll leave it up to the committee and staff to work on those concerns.
Thanks,
Jennifer.
Thank you, Jennifer.
Our second deposition is from James Cox, who's the coordinator for the Westbury Sound Economic Development Collaborative, and he's the executive director. So, James, you have the floor.
Well, thank you very much, Mayor and councillors, for the opportunity to speak to McKellar Council tonight. As was mentioned, my name is James Cox, and I'm the Regional Economic Development Officer associated with the West Perry Sound Economic Development Collaborative. And I'm here tonight to provide Council with an update on our activities over the past 18 months and then our planned activities for the coming 18 months, and provide a bit of an overview of what we do at the regional economic development level and some of the things that we're working on right now. Okay, the next slide, please. So for everyone's reference, the Westbury Sound Economic Development Collaborative consists of the seven municipalities in Westbury Sound District that work together on a cooperative basis with a mandate to drive collaborative economic development in our area by building on our current strengths, pursuing opportunities that come to our attention, and generally trying to build the region as a cohesive economic development destination, a destination for business, a destination for investment, and destination for residents, and things like that. Our area it's obviously a very large geographic area, but it is surprisingly interconnected in terms of its industry, in terms of its business community. 70% of all of the employees at businesses that are located within West Perry Sound live within West Perry Sound as well. There's a huge number of employment flows throughout our area, and so our mandate is to pursue projects that strengthen the region's economy. Okay, next slide again. Thank you. So our work at the regional level is supported by a grant that we have received from FedNor, Community Investment in Northern Ontario grant. And the current term of our grant started in December of 2020 and runs through until December of 2023. So it's a three-year program, and we're right at the halfway mark right now. So it's an excellent time to stop and take stock of some of the things that we're doing and look to the future about where we want to go from here. And next slide again, thank you. So we have four priorities that we focus on in terms of our work at the Economic Development Collaborative, these being business retention and expansion, development readiness, investment attraction, and then regional engagement. I'm going to briefly go through each one of these in turn to talk a little bit again about what we've done so far and what we're planning on doing in the future. So I would say that our first and foremost focus at the regional economic development level is the question of business retention and expansion. And what this is at its most basic level, we work with existing businesses within our area in order to help them stay and grow in West Perry Sound. So we have a large base of business within our area. We have over 600 businesses that we know of that are located within the seven municipalities that we operate that employ thousands of people. And it's our job, really, to ensure that they have the opportunity, if they're expanding their operations or they want to hire more people or do more business, that they have the opportunity to do that in our area. And so our method for going about doing this involves a business retention and expansion surveying project. And this consists of doing in-person visits to businesses to discuss the challenges that they may be facing, opportunities that they are looking to pursue in the future, and identify any red flag issues. So if business is encountering a serious problem that may impact their future viability, we want to identify that and do what we can to help resolve that so that they're able to stay and grow within West Perry Sound. So We are trying to get out as broadly as possible to speak to as many of our businesses to get a comprehensive view of what our region's economy looks like. Our initial focus for the first 18 months has been on the manufacturing, tourism, and service sectors. And in the coming 18 months, as we round out the project, we're looking to expand more broadly to that and extend our reach as far as possible. It's not possible to get out to see everyone in person, but we are doing our utmost to be as broad as possible, and we encourage anyone who may have an issue or may benefit from a conversation with our office to, if anyone has any referrals or any members of council are aware of a business that may benefit from that, we would certainly welcome that referral. So our second thing that we focus on is the question of development readiness. So at its most basic level, this means that we are working to ensure that West Perry Sound is ready to welcome investment when it comes. So our primary method of doing this is to serve as a liaison between municipalities and the business community and potential investors to ensure that there's a mutual understanding and that potential investors understand what the process is like if they're looking to come and develop and open a business here. We want to strive to make the lines of communication between us at the municipal level and our business community as clear as possible. We're supplementing these efforts right now through the creation of sort of common guides to development for West Perry Sound, which will be made available digitally as part of our investment attraction package when those are complete, and those are being worked on right now. Our third priority is investment attraction. So this is often what people think about when they think of economic development, the goal of attracting new business and new investment to West Perry Sound. So what our goal is here is to provide a single point of contact for any new business inquiries that come in so that we can direct them, we can guide them, we can provide them with the information they need to make a decision about whether they're looking to locate their business within our area. We also organize familiarization tours for any prospective investors where we invite them to our area, we meet with them, we'll go out, we'll introduce them to decision makers and municipal staff that may be relevant to their question, potential funding agencies, our counterparts from the federal and provincial government, and also show them potential properties and generally give them as much of an opportunity to become familiar with our area, to put our best foot forward and really roll the welcome mat for new investment. As of right now, our approach is, due to our current capacity and our current resourcing, we are positioning ourselves to welcome investment when it comes. We haven't done proactive marketing in the last few years, but we are in the process again right now over the next 18 months of developing some targeted investment attraction campaigns where we'll identify specific gaps that would exist within our regional business mix and specifically go out and try to attract investment in those areas. And our final priority is the question of regional engagement to ensure that our economic development activities in the West Perry Sound area are connected and coordinated. And so by this, I mean that in our area, there are close to 45 different groups that have some role in economic development, ranging from our 7-member municipalities to the provincial and federal governments and the respective ministries that have responsibility for providing grant funding and developing business in our area, to nonprofit organizations or business organizations like our Chambers of Commerce, our Downtown Business Association, partners in the post-secondary area like Canada College in Perry Sound, or the Community Business Development Corporation. And all of these groups work on different parts of economic development. They can help businesses in different specific ways. And so our goal really is to try and serve as the connective tissue between all of this economic development ecosystem so that we regularly meet with all of our different economic development supportive agencies to identify opportunities where we can coordinate our efforts, where we can partner, and then generally that we can work together to move the area forward. So as I mentioned, over the next 18 months, we're going to be looking to conclude our activities that we have committed to for the current round of funding. So this involves developing that proactive investment attraction package, which I mentioned earlier. We are working on creating a digital counterpart to our familiarization tour schedule. We are looking to complete our BR&E program. Our target is to reach 250 businesses within our area by January of 2023, at which point we'll be bringing forward our final report about what we've heard, what the challenges that are facing our area are, what steps we've taken to address them, and what some of the recommendations for future actions are. And we're also in the process of planning a community improvement plan summit in the spring of 2023. And what this is going to be a one-day event that looks at potential ways in which the municipalities and our partners in this area may be able to help start to address the housing crisis that we are experiencing right now. The number one issue that we hear in our business retention and expansion surveys is the shortage of housing, which is in turn impacting a shortage of workforce in our area. And so this is an event that will follow up on the Housing Summit, which was originally held in our area in 2018, and we'll look at some of the potential incentives and policy tools that are available to the municipalities and our partners that we can potentially use to help incentivize more housing options within our area. And that is the conclusion of my very brief overview of our activities, and at this point I'd be happy to answer any questions that council may have at this time. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, James. As you know, I think that tourism is a major part of economic development, and to me, in our particular community, tourism is a huge business. What's happening with your group with tourism and your emphasis on tourism for the other municipalities around Parry Sound and Seaton?
So what our engagement with the tourism businesses right now has been through our business retention and expansion survey. So we've been meeting individually with tourism operators to get a sense of the challenges that they're facing. And where we've engaged with them, we have tried to connect them to funding options that can help mitigate some of the challenges that they've faced during the pandemic. There's lots of support out there for tourism businesses right now to help them. That was put in place to help them get through the shutdowns and the really disastrous few years that the tourism sector has had, and to get them back on their feet. Now that sort of immediate crisis is starting to get behind us, there's been a renewed push for regional development of tourism experiences. So we try to connect any specific tourism operators where there might be opportunities for partnerships between businesses. We've tried to help facilitate those conversations. And we've also been working very directly with our regional tourism organization to help get more focus for this area on the question of tourism development. Because right now we have a lot of really, really great individual tourism operators, but we haven't really developed a cohesive identity for the region that can help, again, expand our reach beyond our borders and attract more tourists. So that is where we're at right now, and it's going to be an ongoing focus for us over the next 18 months.
Anybody from council have any questions? Councilor Kegley?
Yeah, just looking at the CINO application stage one and notes accompanying that, there was quite a list of companies that the West Parry Sound Economic Development Collaborative would be working with. And the deliverables indicated that the employment forecast and jobs created over 3 years would be 205. So is there any, this is the first update that we've actually received regarding this collaborative, from the time we've been funding it. Is there any updates on those deliverables, and is there a report available so we can see, what has lined up with what the forecast was?
So that's a very good question. Thank you. Thank you for that. So in terms of the specific one that you mentioned, in terms of job attraction, We have worked very closely with the Parry Sound Industrial Park and specifically with the Parry Sound Municipal Airport, specifically on their business attraction efforts. And we have been involved in bringing 8 different businesses to the area in those 2 areas specifically that when they are fully operational are anticipated to have an employment base of close to 150 people. Now, understanding that these are new investments to the area and it's going to take them some time to get up and get fully operational, and again, recognizing the challenges that exist for finding workforce in the area. So that is absolutely a long-term measure. I believe that we are on track to meet that by the end of 2023. In terms of reporting on the other measures, we submit regular reports to FedNor in terms of tracking those measures, and I would be happy to submit those to the member municipalities as well so you can track our specific progress on that.
Great, thank you.
Any other questions? All right, thanks very much. I appreciate your comments. Look forward to that report.
Thank you very much.
And our third one is our auditors. I'm going to ask Carl to come on up and give us the good news.
Thank you, Your Worship. Nice to see a crowd. Quite a change from the last couple of years. Pretty used to doing all these presentations virtually, so it is quite pleasant actually that people speak with and see them in person. So thank you for that opportunity. Yes, it's that time of the year again where we review, not in old detail, but in highlights of your annual financial results for the Corporation for the Township of McKellar. So I have with me the annual financial statements. I'll just run through some highlights of those financial statements. First of all, is our independent auditor's report. And that auditor's report is in unqualified form. In other words, it's a clean auditor's report. Your financial statements, of course, are prepared in accordance with the Canadian public sector accounting standards, and that requires you to capitalize your fixed assets, such as your buildings, your bridges, roads, equipment, take amortization over time. And then we do our work in accordance with Canadian auditing standards for public sector entities, such as the municipality and township of McKellar. So again, the financial statements, our audit report is a clean audit report, which means that we undertook a review of your accounts, examined in detail transactions, processes, internal controls, management operations, and support for the various numbers that make up your financial statements. And we did not find any errors or concerns, and therefore our opinion is a clean auditor's report. I would then turn to page 4 of the financial package, which is the consolidated statement of financial position. Why is this called consolidated? Because it includes the accounts of the township and also of the local boards, the cemetery, and the library board. You also contribute to other non-consolidated entities, which includes the North Bay Parry Sound District Health Unit, Parry Sound DSAT Board, and the District of Parry Sound Home for the Aged. But again, you only contribute to those entities, so those results are not consolidated in here. Only your contributions are reflected as an expenditure in these financial statements for those particular entities. So the financial position at the end of December 31st, 2021, which is your fiscal year end, no different than every other municipality and township and city in the province of Ontario. Cash and cash equivalents on hand at the end of the year were $2,502,000 as compared to $1,717,000 at the end of 2020. Your accounts receivable were $494,000 in 2021 versus $530,000 at the end of 2020. Accounts payable increased slightly from $529,000 in the prior year to $539,000 in the current year. Deferred revenue down slightly from $178,000 last year to $64,000 this year. It actually returned to Note 5, which provides detail on deferred revenue. It's on page 12 of the package. So again, from an accounting perspective, the accounting rules require you to defer certain amounts that you've received until those funds are expended on those programs that those funds were intended for. And therefore, federal gas tax, at the end of the year, you had a balance of $14,851 unspent, and other revenues of $49,947,000 in respect of a recreation fund that were unspent. Municipal debt, detailed in note 6. This year there was a new debt facility. The ending balance was $155,293. This is through Infrastructure Ontario. It is due in repayable and semi-annual payments of $17,816 and at a very effective interest rate of 1.29%. Continuing on the statement of financial position, there is details in respect of employee benefits payable, a small amount of $2,788, landfill closure, post-closure obligation, $13,400 accrual. That gives us net financial assets of $2,221,000 in the current year, versus $1,522,000 in the prior year, so an increase of approximately $700,000 in cash on hand in net financial assets at the end of the year. The next major category in the financial position is the tangible capital assets. Again, the accounting standards for public sector entities, such as the Township of McKellar, requires you to put those assets on your balance sheet or on your statement of financial position. So Schedule 1 provides detail of the $16,230,000 of tangible capital assets that are on your books as of December 31st, 2021. Which is a slight decrease from $16,519,000 per year. And if I'd ask you to turn to Schedule 1 and to provide some detail on additions in the year, as you can see, there was $141,000 added in machinery and equipment. Your audiovisual system was in that expenditure. There was a 2021 Freightliner tandem truck added, which is included in your $260,000 in additions in vehicles. Again, you're required to write off your tangible assets over their useful lives. We review those accounting policies each year to ensure that they're comparable to other similar townships and that they're appropriate for your particular operating circumstances. And so in accordance with your depreciation or amortization policies, you took $973,000 of depreciation on your equipment in the year. And again, so the closing balance of capital losses, $16,230,000. So in summary, at the end of December 31st, 2021, the accumulated surplus of the Township of McKellar was $18,548,000. As compared to $18,161,000 in the prior year, so an increase of almost $400,000. Again, it's not all cash. The largest item, of course, is the tangible equipment and buildings and bridges and roads that you're required to have on your books over their life, essentially. The next schedule I'd ask you to turn to is page 5, which is the statement of operations. Here there are details in respect of the various revenue categories. The largest revenue item, of course, is property taxes. And property taxes for the year were $3,514,000 versus $3,360,000 in the prior year. Government transfers, the largest amount, which is the UNPF funding of approximately $757,000, were $1,166,000 for the year. Other revenues, including investment income, a number of other items, permits, building permits, significant permit revenue, $222,000 in the year. So an aggregate revenue of $5,111,000 versus $4,754,000 in the prior year. Below the revenue items are the various expenditure categories. These are broken into various captions which are consistent on a year-over-year basis. General government caption, protections to persons and property, transportation services, environmental services, all the various categories, including the various contributions to the non-consolidated boards. So in aggregate, the annual surplus, in accordance with the full PSAP accounting, which is capitalizing your assets as opposed to expensing in the year of expenditure and amortizing your assets over their useful life, the municipal surplus was $387,540 for the year. So yes, it's a healthy and strong position. I would then just provide a little bit of comments on some of the notes to the financial statements that we haven't looked at yet. As you see, page 8, page 9, and page 10. These are all your summary notes of county policies. Again, we review these annually to see if there's any requirements for any changes. There were no changes to these in the current year. As you see on page 9, there's the detail on the various amortization periods for the major capital assets of the township. You can see land improvements, 20 years, buildings, 50 years, machinery, equipment, depending upon the type of equipment, 10 to 20 years, vehicles, 8 to 20 years, roads, 10 to 60 years, bridges, 60 years. So those are your various amortization policies. We have no changes in those policies this year, and we concur with no changes in those policies. Page 11, note number 2, there's detail on the contributions to each of the joint boards. As you can see, TSAP, $286,000 in the year. North Perry Sound District Health Unit, $38,290 in Belvedere Heights, Home for the Aged, a net amount of $45,029 for the year. Financial statements also include information because as part of your taxation revenue that you collect the taxes on behalf of school boards, and so that information is a required disclosure. As you can see, included in your tax taxation amounts that were collected was $1,062,661 in respect of various school board amounts. Included in these statements, again, as I said, were the trust funds. The trust fund, which is essentially the cemetery statement, $49,000 of trust funds on hand at the end of the year versus $47,745 in the prior year. On page 13, there is information in respect of a credit facility, which is not utilized. That's an $800,000 credit facility. There was none owing, there was no amounts owing on that at the end of the year. And those would be my summary comments. So on balance, a strong financial position for Township of McKellar, strong financial results, well managed, and your internal accounting people. Also, I'd like to thank Rashawn. The audit went very smoothly, very limited issues or matters to discuss. It was very much within the normal bounds in terms of how we would expect them in a municipal audit to be conducted. And those are my overall comments. If you have any questions.
I like your good comments. Good report, strong financial, well managed, smooth audit. So that's the only thing I remember the whole time.
But there is a lot of detail.
Good stuff there, so that's appreciated. So any questions from council? Councilor Ketchum?
Looking at the general statement that these consolidated financial statements seem to have, I looked at other ones as well, and it refers to the internal controls.
Yes.
Do you follow the cash flows for different departments and alternate from years to ensure that the chain of custody falls within the internal controls, the policies and procedures to ensure that there aren't, you know, the chances of misappropriation of funds?
So no one can ever give you a fail-safe guarantee that misappropriations of funds don't occur. They don't occur very often, obviously, and the systems of internal controls are there intended to deter that type of activity. We, within our audit processes, we do an extensive review of the internal controls, double signatures, sign off on on the invoices. So we do what's called a cradle-to-grave testing process, where you essentially look at where a transaction starts, in other words, an authorization or approval, perhaps by council for an expenditure, and when that transaction is completed. In other words, a purchase order has been issued, a goods have been received, an invoice has been received, and a payment has been completed. So we actually would carry through and test those on a sample basis. That that process and the documentation of each stage in that process is done on a complete and methodical and approved basis. So that is what that is part of the audit process essentially. Again, there's no way to have an absolute guarantee that just it's not possible. Unfortunately, it's not practicable. But your processes and controls for the size of municipality that you have are very good. So we did not come up with any errors. We did not detect any errors. So there's one thing, that there's an accounting error that happens. So that's an unintentional mistake. Something got done wrong. We didn't come up with errors, let alone detect any issues of concern over how processes were being followed.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions, Councilor? Yes.
Carl, on page 12, when we're talking about the municipal debt, you have a sentence up in the middle of the page saying it is a semi-annual payment of $17,816, and yet when I see what we spent in 2021, we spent the same amount. So in other words, if it's semi-annual, shouldn't it have been $34,000 there, or am I missing something? If you want, I can just bring it and show you where I'm looking on the page, but
I can see.
It's a minor point, and it's a very small amount.
I suspect, I'm not sure, but perhaps, which I was going to say, perhaps it's a time when the debt was taken out.
The first payment came out in December of last year, so that's why there was no second payment.
Okay. Good answer. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks very much, Carol. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Good work. Thanks to our staff.
Good work. Did we meet with you just first?
Yes, please.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So we have resolution 22214 be resolved that the Council of Pennsylvania Counties hereby receive a deputation from Jennifer Dent Fuller with respect to the Lake Stewardship and Environmental Committee request to plant a butterfly garden in the garden in front of the gazebo.
That's not quite right.
Not quite right, no. You want to do, should we change that term?
The wording to
add them. Okay, I like the wording of
the
pollinator patch. Yeah.
It does sound better.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, that's fine. Just want to get it right. Because these were developed before we had all the PP things coming in.
Correct.
Just being the change to, they were planning a pollinator patches on the properties belonging to the township. So I need a mover and a second. Councillor Haskin, second. Councillor Kekkonen, any discussion?
Can you read the whole thing?
Be resolved that the Council of Township Recovery hereby received a deputation from Jennifer Dent Fuller requesting planting pollinator patches on properties belonging to the township.
In consultation with staff.
Let's
do that one.
Okay. We're going to go back to this. What number is that?
214.
Draft 2. Be it resolved that the Council of Township McCullough does agree that the Lake Stewardship Environmental Committee planning pollinator gardens on township property in consultation with the township staff as to the placement and size of such gardens. And we had
yes.
Molly moving.
Molly and Mike.
Is there any discussion?
Did that say in consultation and approval of the township staff?
Consultation.
discuss consultation.
And
well, I wouldn't think they could have to do it with a consultation.
I have approval, that's fine. No problem.
And approval of the township staff. Any discussion? Call the question, all in favor? Carried, thank you. Resolution 22215, be resolved that the Council of Township McKellar does hereby receive the deputation from James Cox, Westbury Sound Economic Development Collaborative, regarding the Westbury Sound Economic Development Collaborative. Mover and second, please. Council Ryland? Any discussion? Call a question, all in favor? Carried. And third one is Resolution 22216, be resolved that the Council of Township McKellar hereby receive the presentation of the 2021 financial report from Bahopville and Associates. Mover and second, please. Councilor Haskin, second. Councilor Ryland, is there any discussion? Call a question, all in favor? Carried, thank you. Resolution 22217, that the Council of Township McKellar does hereby approve the minutes of the May 10th, 2022 regular council meeting, the May 30th, 22 special meeting of council. I need a mover and a seconder, please. Mr. Mueller? Second. Councilor Haskin? Any discussion, errors, omissions, corrections? Yes, please.
Resolution 22191, be resolved that the Council of Township and McKellar does hereby approve the consent agenda. And 194 says receive the consent agenda. Which is it supposed to be?
Receive.
Any others?
Doing the May the 30th one now, too. Mm-hmm. No, nothing there. It's okay.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Call the question. All in favor? Carry.
Hopkins. I will read the motion. Be it resolved that the Council of Township McKellar does hereby recommend that the consent application for a lot addition as applied for an application number B30/2022 McKellar by Peter Hopkins be recommended for approval subject to the following conditions. Confirmation that the severed lands will merge with the benefiting lots or lands, I should say, and payment of all applicable planning fees. Do we have a mover for that motion? Rich. And a seconder? Nick. Okay. Now we will, do we have John Jackson from Perry Sound Area Planning Board in attendance to go over his report on this consent application.
Yes.
John, you're there, are you?
I'm here. Mr. Chairman, can I be heard?
Yes, we can hear you, John. Please go ahead with the report.
Certainly, the application is going to transfer about 5 acres of waterfront land on Grail Lake to the neighbor to the north, which is currently not a waterfront land, but it is owned by the Denner Dogs, and it is a lot of addition, but it's got a bit of a perk to it because it will transform the Denner Dog acreage from a non-waterfront property to a waterfront property. I've been in contact with the beneficiary of the lot addition, and he's not sure what the ultimate kind of program will be for this lot. So it's more or less to be thought of as a wholesale transfer of land to a future likely application to come before the municipality and possibly the planning board. I think it's that simple. I think it's a different, slightly different application in the sense that Mr. and Mrs. Hopkins are doing this as part of a state planning program. But at this point, I don't see any substantive impacts in terms of the municipality or lake residents until some future time. So I'm happy to answer any questions, Mr. Chairman, if there are any.
Yeah, I'll turn it over to council members to see if they have any questions for you, John.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Rick.
John, it's Rick. Can you hear me?
You're here, Rick. Yes, I can, Rick.
So first of all, reading your planning report, I am questioning why you are addressing zoning after our last planning board meeting, and it was quite clear to me that the planning board wasn't going to address zoning.
Well, I don't think I ever said that. I think that was said by certain members, but I think zoning is an integral part of planning. I wouldn't suggest that you don't consider it. Those weren't my words.
So if zoning comes up again, then we're allowed to speak about it, and I thought it was clear to me that the planning board wasn't going to have anything to do with zoning. That was up to the municipality that the consent was applicable to.
In terms of the merits of changing the zoning, you're right, that comes within the jurisdiction. But for the purposes of considering an application, you certainly look at the relevance of zoning impact.
Okay, the second question is the mapping that you have provided doesn't appear to show any fish habitat, whereas whenever I look at the official plan and the zoning bylaw for the township, they both contain fish habitat, including type 1 fish habitat.
There's always been a bit of a incongruency between the official plan and the zoning. So what we do as a screening process is try and rationalize the matter with respect to any potential aquatic vegetation by looking at the property, the aerial photos, where possible or necessary, we get up and have a look at the property. But again, I would characterize this as more of a wholesale type application. So this 5 hectares that's going to the neighbor with its attendant several hundred years of frontage will likely come someday in terms of a future application of some sort to the municipality as well as the planning board potentially.
So who is the we that went out and looked at the property? You?
In this case, I just screened it through the air photos, which are part of the package as well.
And as a certified planner, do you have the qualifications of a biologist to look at that property?
I know what I'm looking for, and if there was a flag that I thought was an impediment for this transaction proceeding, I would have dealt with that.
And the one more question is, you said in your report that it essentially makes the RU lands all waterfront. So it makes them waterfront without an OP amendment?
No, the lands themselves are designated and zoned as waterfront. They're being transferred to an adjoining property owner that's rural.
And your report says, though, it essentially will make that property all waterfront.
Well, what we do, and we know from the instruments that five here, whenever you have highway or road frontage and water frontage, the designated frontage is determined always to be water.
So you're saying that it wouldn't require an official plan amendment for it to be waterfront?
No, I don't think that comes into play in terms of this transaction. I think what the policy does allow, when it's followed as far as the language, it talks about the functionality of a property in terms of the orientation to the water. So the real true impact here is this will become a functional waterfront property. What will ultimately follow is, I'm not sure. If the lands are just used for the shoreline area within 150 meters of the shoreline, they're likely to continue to be considered separately. Again, it will all depend on what the new reconfigured lot to the north may have in terms of any aspirations in the future.
It seems to me to be a very misleading statement in a planning report.
I think that you can interpret it perhaps any way you wish, but it's not intended to mislead. It's intended to, in fact, state what is occurring in this transaction.
Any other questions for John from council members? Is there anybody present that that is involved with this consent, the applicant or the owners of the benefiting lands? Are they present at all that would like to speak to this? No? Okay. Okay, thanks, John, for your report. Will any other comments from council before we bring it to the table? No? Okay.
I'd like to make an amendment to that resolution.
Okay. Okay, maybe fairly lengthy. It looks like I'm going to read Reg's writing here, so I'll give it a try. Okay, I read the original motion part with the number one and number two. Now number three is on here.
Is it possible that members of council get a copy of what's being read? It'd be a lot easier to understand. You can follow and read what it says.
Okay. Okay, number three. Both the PPS 2020M and Caler OP provide that environmentally sensitive areas, including fish taps, be considered and protected during any evaluation of an application for consent. And it is apparent that both McKellar OP and zoning bylaw 9512 designate and zone the frontage of the proposed retained lot and possibly the proposed lot addition to be EP and type 1 fish habitat. And as being the practice of the PSA, Perry County Planning Board, and the Township of McKellar to require an environmental site assessment report be undertaken prior to consideration of any consent adjacent to EP or type 1 fish habitat. Site assessments have been undertaken for other applicants for consents within the Township of McKellar recently as 2021. Therefore, be it resolved that the Council requests that the Perry Sanitary Plan Board or to defer consideration of the application B30/2022 until an environmental site assessment undertaken by a qualified expert is prepared to address any fish habitat along the shore of the proposed severed and retained properties and mitigation measures to protect and preserve any fish habitat are addressed and some informed conditions of any provision.
He's got the original copy. Cut off the photocopy.
You got the original.
Informed conditions of any provisional consent.
Okay. Informed conditions of any provisional consent. Okay. Very good. Okay, at this point, is it Council's wishes to have this point three added to this resolution? Or do they feel the resolution with the first and second points only is adequate? Can I hear comments from Council members?
Lacking background information on this, what's the risk of not including three, and or what's the risk of including three? Either way, I guess. I mean, an environmental assessment would be an expensive process. Is that accurate?
It can be.
Or lengthy. I mean, yeah, it takes a while to get one ordered.
Yeah, I have no idea. It just depends on how busy they are.
Okay.
Yeah. Neither one of them should come in and play on whether they're needed or not.
That's valid.
Yeah, and this is, to me, is an important statement right here. The township previously and the planning board had previously requested them where there was type 1 habitat on the property. And it's quite clear there's type 1 habitat there.
Okay. And I'm not questioning, I'm just asking a question here. How is it quite clear? I mean, or where is it quite clear?
So there's the zoning map.
Yeah.
And this is the property, so you can see this section has the dots on it.
Okay.
There's the official plan map. See it there?
Okay.
There's the legend for the official plan.
Okay.
So it's type 1 habitat.
Okay.
The blue is environmentally sensitive. So that means black dotted is type 1 fish habitat.
Okay. Thank you. I didn't know that.
Councilor Kevin, you have any comment?
So regarding the first part of the resolution, it comments and basically states that Township McKellar does hereby recommend that the consent application for lot addition as applied for application number B30-2022 McKellar by Peter Hawkins be recommended for approval subject to the following conditions. So Township is a commenting agency. Is commenting on this application. So the planning board, would they be making the final decision? We provide this suggestion recommendation.
This is a condition that the township is putting on it. So the conditions all have to be satisfied before the deeds are stamped. You can ask John that, but I'm pretty sure that's the way it is.
So this would, if the municipality adds number three on this, this would be required as part of the, to satisfy the consent application.
We're asking the planning board on this to defer, but that's up to the planning board whether they decide to defer it or not.
John, did you catch what I read, number three point we added to this resolution?
I think I did. I'm a little confused. When I'm looking at the zoning bylaw in the court that shows the property highlighted, it doesn't show any DP area lands along the shoreline, so I'm a little confused.
It's all DP. I don't know what zoning bylaw you're looking at.
I'm assuming I have the correct zoning bylaw, but one of the things that happened on a number of occasions is that there were AP inconsistencies that occurred in a number of instances throughout the updates to the plan. So I have to double check that. If there are none that I can identify, is it a fair conclusion that the understanding is incorrect? Because if it's not there, there isn't any need to undertake any assessment.
I agree.
Secondly, I would just add that one of the programs that the municipality set up in terms of the triggering of studies was that they were minimal for simple consent transactions, depending upon, obviously, the circumstance. So I'm not, I don't think I concur with the notion that such assessments are done in every case. But it can be examined, as the chair indicated, something we can look at.
There was one as recently as the fall of 2021 that required a site assessment because of type 1 habitat. I'm assuming that it was your planning report that required it.
I'm sorry, which application was that?
Flood.
I'm not hearing that clearly.
Flood?
Flood. Yes, well, it in fact did have, even before we would receive the application at the planning board, we screened that one and indicated that there was a dominant characteristic of critical habitat, and so we, as I say, in that screening process, set them out to have the assessment done. Prior to even receiving the application.
So if I look at the up-to-date official plan, it shows that there is type 1 fish habitat on all the retained lands. Is it not accurate?
I would submit no. I would submit that. My belief is that the zoning is more accurate. The current zoning is more accurate.
And the current zoning, whenever I look at it, shows it all fish habitat.
I'm looking at
all EP. Sorry.
I'm looking at the zoning attached to this report, and I'm looking at the imagery, and I'm not seeing what.
Mary just photocopied these for me today, right off the township website, so I'm not sure what John's looking at.
Okay, I'm going to suggest that since there seems to be information that needs to be clarified, I would make a suggestion that this motion, if council's okay with that, be deferred until the next meeting, and we can get this information and the, and
before I would agree to that, I want John to know if it's from John if it's going to be on the planning board meeting for the end of June.
I'm sorry.
More of you suggesting we defer this until we have more information, and I'm not agreeable to that unless I have confirmation from you that it won't be on the planning board agenda for the end of June.
Well, I mean, I don't make any planning board decisions. I'm the messenger. So
you make up the agenda, though.
Well, I'm saying to you that if you want it deferred, and there's a good argument for it, the planning board should agree with that.
Not always.
No. I don't make decisions.
You make the agenda, like I said.
Good job, right?
Yes.
So I don't agree to deferring it then.
What about other council members? Do we bring it to the table with deferred on there? Are you in favor of that, or if that's you're not? Or we can also an option is go back. Reg is recommending list number three. I never got a consensus. Do we want the number three added onto this motion prior to reading, or not? I didn't really get clarification on that. Or we defer it. What do the other council members like to do?
Defer it exactly for what, Morley? I mean, I've heard you, but I'm not clear on we are deferring for what?
To get clarification on the shoreline restrictions, such as fish habitat and EP zoning.
All of our planning documents show it as EP and type 1 habitat. I have a copy here if you want it.
Okay, that's fine. That's your opinion, Reg. I'd just like to get more input from the council members. Do
it's
you
not
want
my opinion. It's the planning documents that show it. That's the documents we use for planning purposes in the township. That's what everybody gets to look at.
And do we request an environmental study on every property that has like EP on the at the shoreline?
I'm not sure I can answer that for you. All of the retained lands will be type 1 fish habitat if this consent goes through. There'll be no frontage on the retained lot that won't have type 1 habitat. And our planning documents say you need some type 2 for recreational purposes.
Okay, this is how unless the council feels to go proceed with the motion with number 3 added on.
Yes, I'd be in favor of that. With the information provided, I'd rather err on the side of caution and be consistent with other applications. And the environmental report, if there's nothing, will be a quick report if there's no concerns. But if there is concerns, then they will be addressed.
It could, in fact, come back just like John says and say there's no EP on any of the frontage.
Right, okay. So, council is fine with me adding on to the original motion, number 3, as per attached. Okay. All those in favor?
Of adding number 3 on there?
Yes, I have added number 3 onto that motion. I have read it. So, yes, with number 1, number 2, and number 3 conditions on this motion, I will call...
Can I have a record vote, please?
Okay.
Councillor Nick Ryland.
Just so I'm clear exactly what we're voting right now on, whether number 3 is to be added to the resolution.
No, number 3 is on the resolution.
Okay. I'll vote yes.
Councillor Reg Moore.
Yes.
Councillor Mike Keckman.
Yes.
Deputy Mayor Haskell.
Yes. Okay, so we can grab here, come back in.
Close that.
Yeah, you can.
what Mary put it down for, right on the township website.
Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Head, 9.2.
Resolution 22-219. Be resolved that the Council of Township Gardeners recommend that the consent application for lot addition is applied for an application B14-2022, colored by Brian Adams, be recommended for approval subject to the following conditions. Confirmation from the lawyer that lands added to the neighboring property will merge in title and to payment of all applicable planning fees. I have a mover and a second, please. Second. Councilor Haskell. Any discussion? Mr. Jackson. Yeah. John, would you like to speak to it, please?
Certainly. Chairman, the application is simply a lot addition from a neighboring property. To increase the long-term privacy between the properties, both resulting retaining the benefit lots will comply with the planning instruments. So it really is a straightforward application. If you have to answer any questions.
Any questions from members of council?
I would agree with John on this. This is straightforward.
Any other questions? If not, then we'll call a question. All in favor? Good. Resolution 22-220, be resolved that the Council of Township Gardeners recommend that the consent application for the creation of two new rural lots as applied for application number B19-2022 by William Colborne be recommended for approval subject to the following conditions. Payment of any parkland fees, verification from the Director of Operations by way of a staff report. The two lots can accommodate an entrance in compliance with municipal standards, 911 addressing. And the payment of all applicable planning fees. May I have a mover and a second, please? Councillor Haskell, second. Councillor Riley. John, again, I'll ask you to comment on your report.
Thank you. The application by Mr. Colbert is simply to create two new spots on Dickinson Road. That's within the area that's maintained by the municipality, and the lot fronts and areas comply with the municipal zoning and policy. So, unless there's any questions, be happy to answer.
Yes, Mr. Moore.
John, I think you should be adding in there confirmation by way of a surveyor's real property report. There's compliance with the applicable sections of the municipal zoning bylaw, that electrical services are in compliance and sewage services. And confirmation by way of a staff report that the severed lots can accommodate an entrance in compliance with the municipal standards.
I think if I could comment on the former suggestion, a real property report probably isn't necessary, but maybe an access review by Greg is appropriate. I've been on the site, it's fairly straightforward. A real property report is probably going to be more or less the same time for doing an environmental assessment, be a year. I don't know that that's fair to make them wait that long, so I close my comment.
Any other questions?
So can I comment?
Yes.
So my answer to that is that John's been on site and I could be on site too, but I can't tell how far that property is, the buildings on the property and sewage system or the electrical overhead service lines or underground lines, if they're going to cross the proposed lots or anything like that. I can't tell that whenever I'm there. And John can't either. So a surveyor's real property report needs to tell you that. He's just assuming that the distances are okay and everything's okay. The surveyors are going to be out there anyway, surveying the property for the consent. They have to put the survey lines on a map anyway.
Okay, deferred to Mr. Jackson, deferred to Mr. Moore. Any other discussion?
Just a concern. Yes, thank you. Just a concern. I have a separate lot number two, John. As you can see, it fronts 62 meters on Dickinson's Road, but it also goes back and touches on, I believe, what is a right-of-way at the back of the lot. A little concern would be that they could decide to access off that private right-of-way. Is that something that we want to see happen?
No, it's not part of the application, so it wouldn't happen.
I don't quite understand. It does front on that private right-of-way, doesn't it, John?
Yes, but unless it's registered, it's newly created lot, it would have entitlement to use that quite a lot, too.
Okay, so if they did decide to use that as their access, that would be the owners of the private right-of-way could take action.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
And the frontage is along Dickinson Road, and this part of the property is very, very level and accessible without constraint.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Hearing none, we'll call the question. All in favor?
So we're not adding any of those?
He says it's not necessary.
So he's not the planner for the township.
His report is in here, recommending that. So.
It's not the township planning report. It's the planning board planning report.
Yes?
Okay, so that I've got on there. I put that on there.
You did, right?
Yeah.
What are we missing or adding?
So I did add on to this verification from the director of operations by way of staff report. The two lots can accommodate an entrance in compliance with municipal standards.
Perfect.
I did put
so
that.
So there's just the one thing
so
that,
just
that
the
I
one
want
thing
to add.
In there. So the one thing Councilor Moore wants added is the surveyor report.
Okay. You want to add in? What's Councilor's wish?
I don't think that's a major issue. It's got to be surveyed anyway.
That's what I said.
So it's just a case of them sending a copy to the township to confirm it and everything. If it meets the what's on the drawings here, it should be fine. No added expense or anything.
Might be a little bit more.
For them to send a copy to the township or whatever. But
for the surveyor to do a real report as opposed to the plan. The surveyor to.
What's your wish?
Are there some known services or anything that are crossing the properties there?
I have
or?
No idea, Mike. There's underground services, there's overhead services. I have no idea where the septic is. But is it 5 meters clear of the proposed lots?
I would just say that a survey or a surveyor's real property report is not going to find underground service or septic.
If you ask for
I don't think they're going to locate a septic. They'll do an approximate location, but it's not going to be exact because it's underground.
Yeah.
Right? A surveyor won't dig that up.
No. But they'll mark the slopes on it, so they'll show the distance from the slopes.
From the slopes, yes, but it's not an exact distance. Still, but any buildings on the property will be exact.
Yeah.
But underground service, it won't be unless they do a locate.
An overhead service. If
overhead they could do, but underground they wouldn't.
I just know from personal experience, trying to get a surveyor is very difficult.
He has to get a surveyor to get his consent for
Yeah, I know, but I'm saying that it's very difficult after going through 8 months of that process.
But this confirmation for a surveyor real property report doesn't change that time. He has to have a surveyor in order to get a survey done for his consent.
It's your wish. Planner says we don't need it. Morley doesn't have concerns. So are we going to add it or are we not going to add it? And then board or vote out the amendment and then vote the regular resolution. Or just go with the existing resolution?
I'm fine with the existing resolution, but maybe we should get a recommendation going forward, because there will be lots of consents going on in the township, whether we should be requesting that, whether that's something standard that does happen in areas. So, but I think in this case, since we haven't requested that, I know in the past that I'm fine with it not on there.
You just did one down Tate's Island a couple months ago.
Okay. All right, I'm hearing no more discussion at this point in time, so we will call the question as the resolution stands. You can have a recorded vote if you want, Mr.
Yes.
Moore.
Yep.
Councillor Morley Haskam?
Yes.
Councillor Mike Hakkinen?
Yes.
Councillor Reg Moore?
No.
Councillor Nick Ryland?
Yes.
Mayor Peter Hopkins?
Yes. Here. Resolution 22-221. Be resolved that the Council of the Township of Colors hereby accept the resignation of Edward Ted Davidson from the Committee of Adjustment. Mover and second, please. Councillor Haskam, second. Councillor Moore, any discussion? Hearing none, call a question. All in favor? Carried. Resolution 22-222. It's 5-2. I haven't seen that one before. Be resolved that the Council of Township McCullough has hereby received the minutes of the March 10th, 2022, April 7th, 2022, May 3rd, 2022, May 12th, 2022, minutes of the Lake Stewardship and Environmental Committee. Mover and second, please. Councillor Corral, second. Councillor Haskell. Any discussion? Councillor Kekkonen?
Once again, just want to ensure that our council rep to the committee can remind the committee members that the Corporation of the Township of McKellar makes policy decisions, and the committee shall provide council with written reports dealing with the committee's suggestions in an ongoing, timely manner. Recognize that council will only act on suggestions in the form of a report adopted by a resolution of the committee and forwarded to council through the clerk, and recognize that council ultimately has the discretion of approving, amending, or defeating a suggestion. There's mention in the minutes of the committee member communicating with other areas for the Source Water Act. And I think that council needs to have a detailed report of what what's entailed, and ensure that council gives approval for those actions to be taking place.
Any other comments? These are just minutes. Comments?
No, I don't get it.
Any further discussion? Call the question. All in favor? Carried. Resolution 22-223. Be resolved that Council Township has hereby received the May 26, 2022 draft minutes of the Recreation Committee. Mover and seconder. Moore. Second. Mr. Haskin. Any discussion? Hearing none, call the question. All in favor? Harry? Resolution 224, be resolved that the Council of Township McCarran hereby received May 4th, 2022 draft minutes of the Historical Committee. Mover and a second here, please. Councilor Keckley, do you want to move? Questions to your right. Councilor Riley? Is there any discussion? Hearing none, call the question. All in favor? Harry, thank you. Okay, moving into staff reports, and we have three basic ones. So it's been requested from council that we get Dan Hillenbrand, our IT, from our IT specialist, to give us a report on our connectivity problems that we've got and solutions moving forward of how we can deal with the connectivity in this building and in the other building as well, but mostly to try and make sure that we can run proper council meeting without it. And that's a capacity issue, and I'll get you to explain what all that is, and then we can deal with your report. So Dan, you have the floor, and you can help us out and get us through this and get us better.
Well, thank you. So I reviewed a number of solutions, looking at all the options as well as the current solution in place for the municipality. I have some general comments. In general consultation with all the providers, all hardwire solutions due to technology, architecture, and construction, all solutions are very expensive in the hundreds of thousands of dollars for the build alone. And bringing a wire out here is very difficult, as we know. We realize that there's a solution underway in that regard, but that's going to take some time. And the other providers said, you know, this is a very expensive undertaking. The things I wanted to note is with wireless solutions, we ultimately end up looking at a variety of wireless solutions. And for the general understanding, network latency is a key part of that, especially as it relates to wireless. And it's the amount of time it takes for data packets to go from one place to another. Lowering latency is an important part of building a good user experience when it comes to internet and data throughput from these various solutions. Latency levels for wireless are always higher than any hardwire solution, limiting overall speed and reliability. So I just wanted to be upfront in saying the very fact that we're going to be in some sort of other wireless solution, that these are in themselves can be and normally have some level of they can be problematic. That being said, that there are good solutions. They are working for people within the communities, and it's just a matter of which one is going to best suit the community, but it best suit the township itself. ViaNet, Net Spectrum Wireless, is the current solution in place. So it's a solution sold to the municipality through ViaNet, but provided through Net Spectrum. It's the current point-to-point wireless solution in place, and we're currently at maximum capacity due to a number of factors, including the technology, distance, terrain, speed. So the speed available is up to 10 down and up to 5 up. real-world testing, we are getting almost the maximum capacity of 10 down and almost 5 up. So we're actually doing well as far as what it's currently capable of. This particular solution is made for hard-to-reach areas, offering basically generally far lower speeds, but generally fine for basic internet, such as web browsing, email, and other basic uses, such as remote access solutions for corporate environments, such as those for remote desktop and that kind of thing. The current solution, and this is really just taking generally what the company provides, is $167.95 per month. Looking at other solutions, I looked at ExploreNet Satellite, again, a very long-standing solution. Reliable for internet remote locations, and some of this material that I'm providing is provided directly by the provider, so I wanted to kind of note that. ExploreNet Communications is a rural internet service provider and mobile network operator. They claim to be the largest rural fixed wireless broadband service provider in Canada. I did take a look at, based on our location, and the current maximum speeds offered are 25 up and 1 down. The fees for that are $99 plus tax per month. The installation fee, the monthly cost is $124.99 per month. Starlink is another big solution provider. They currently have a constellation of now 800 satellites in orbit. The company has spread across Canada and the U.S. Starlink provides high-speed, low-latency broadband internet across the globe within coverage areas and are fulfilled on a first-come, first-served basis. They do claim very low latency speeds, low latency, high speeds, low latency, using advanced satellites in low orbit. So that's the contrast to, say, something like ExploreNet. They've got more satellites at lower orbit, so they can give you greater speeds through that. And historically, it may not have been possible, but users can expect download speeds of between, this is claimed on the company website, 100 to 200 meg down, and they do claim 20 milliseconds, which is a very low latency. Real world testing, we're not quite seeing that in our area, but I can tell you that I've tested some myself, and with a little work, I was able to get speeds in excess of 80 megabytes down three years ago. And, I think realistically, we're easily 40 to 50 no matter what, and the long-term plan is that those speeds will exceed 100 easily in the next year to 2 years. They very much note that they're ideally suited for rural and remote communities. Most of you have read something in the news about their offerings. I did specifically look at our location, and they expect to expand the service in our area by 2023. I put in a submission to see what it would look like, and they indicated that we would receive it when they're able to ship, which, I truly would believe it would be ahead of that, but that's what they're stating. The hardware is $759 plus tax, plus shipping and handling. They do require a $129 deposit. The internet monthly service cost is $140 per month. Other service solution providers in the area, Bell Canada Wireless. Within the general area, I was able to test one of the service installations in a real-world testing environment and got 25 down and 7 up. It did vary from time to time, as most of these wireless solutions will. Some optimizations by Bell may make it, you know, we may be able to get higher service capability, but testing challenges with the Bell solution included as a residential service, because they don't offer anything commercially within our area here. They have no support for some basic enterprise business services, which include things like VPNs, and certain ports are not available because they're clearly aimed at the residential home market. That's what their availability is in this area. And it's well documented online in regards to some of the challenges related to some of those services. So I have a little bit of skepticism as it relates to that, but to give you an idea of the speeds they claim are 50 up and 50 max down. I guess there are actually two packages in the wireless home, 50 up, 50 down, up to 10. Yeah, I guess that's the base package in our for our area. $149.95 per month. Talus also offers a similar package to Bell, so, you know, in effect, Bell and Talus offer near identical. They use the same basic tower infrastructure, so seems very reasonable. Rogers does offer a slightly different offering, and they've got speeds of up to 50 megabits for 450 gigs of data, then up to 20 megabits. So what they're doing is they're offering you a 50 meg download for a certain amount of capacity, a certain amount of data, and then they throttle it beyond that. Upload speeds of up to 10 megabits and for 450 gigs of data, and then up to 4 for 2 megabits. Activation and installation, $59.99. And the internet cost is $149.99. All of them are subject to rate increases, of course. Another offering is from Maple Wi-Fi. And they're actually, they've been around the country for quite some time. And they actually leverage the three big providers. So Bell, Telus, and Rogers. And they do use their own modems, but they use all of the other infrastructure from the big providers. And it looks like they get, they are able to offer, in some cases, expanded speeds, but similar pricing. The other big thing that they offer is no data limits or set speeds, meaning that they don't do any throttling. Most users are seeing between 30 and 80 megabit down. The router is $375 plus tax. The monthly service is $189 and or $159 depending on packages. So my general in looking at those service offerings. The ones I came to think that could provide the best solutions, and again, some of it through review and some of it through, you know, what they provide in terms of information. The Starlink satellite is definitely very, looks to be very viable. They're definitely making, expanding all the time, and it does look like a very good solution. I've tested now a few of them, and you know, I'm very impressed by what it can do. It's again not perfect. None of these are perfect. The others, if we're looking at a cellular offering of the big three, Maple again seems to be a good option, but ultimately if the township would prefer to stay with one of the big three cell providers and work with them directly, Rogers, offers a similar configuration to Bell, but without the locks, so that's nice. So I lean towards probably either the Starlink or Rogers, but quite open to, you know, we can work with Bell or Telus or any of these providers.
Just a couple of quick questions. So the basic problem here is capacity.
Mm-hmm.
What does that translate that into in terms?
So we've got a 10 megabit pipeline. That's the maximum. And 10 meg down, 5 meg up, right? So the challenge is in effect, obviously both numbers are very, very important, but every megabit makes a difference. And in the reality of it is the higher we can get any of these service offerings, and I want to be clear, when they say 50, or like any solution offering from any provider, hardwire or otherwise, it realistically, real world, you're lucky to get 40 to 60% of that in real world use. When they tell you they're going to give you a, first of all, that's in an ideal situation, is the maximum. And the other things that would deteriorate that number are other environmental factors. There are all sorts of other things that will bring that number down. So when we're looking at what we've got today, it's got a number of challenges, including the ability to communicate to get to tower locations. We've got trees, we've got rock, we've got, you know, Canadian Shield all around us, right? So that's an ongoing challenge. But the reality is that all of these solutions are going to find similar elements. The weather is going to affect us no matter what. I'm going to tell you right up, no matter which one of these we pick, it's not going to be perfect. You are going to have challenges. Without getting us a higher hard wiring, when we get fiber, this will be a very different situation. But for the time being, we're relying on one of these solutions. And, you know, I think they can offer something higher, but I also want to be realistic about it.
As to fiber, did we not get a grant of $12 million with Whitestone? Is that ExploreNet?
With Cogeco?
Or Cogeco.
Yes.
Cogeco, and that's to put fiber.
That's correct.
Into MacKellar somehow, somewhere, sometime.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And that is coming. That is coming. So that's been approved, as I understand it, and publicly stated. So when that line comes through, and we also keeping in mind that there are a number of municipal locations that will include as well, right? So we'll be coming to the municipal office, and, you know, these problems will go away.
So that's a large-scale municipal situation rather than this facility.
That's correct.
The province also has declared in 2025 that the whole province is going to have internet fiber, from what I understand. So
correct.
We're working towards those numbers somewhere along the line. So ultimately, which one will be the short-term recommendation or the long-term recommendation for us to consider as council?
I guess the challenge is, if you want something immediate, we've got to go to one of the big, you know, the cell providers. They can provide us something.
Did you look at Starlink Premium?
I'm aware of it. It's a very expensive solution, and it's definitely a fantastic solution, but it is, I didn't cost it because of the cost. I didn't include it in this scenario, right?
But at least it's available now. If you pay the money, you get the service now.
Right.
I've been on the regular residential Starlink, if you want me to call that list, for more than a year, and I'm sure other people in this room definitely have too.
Mm-hmm.
Some people longer than that.
Right.
Right. At least it's a solution that's something we have today and we could go forward with. Just for the audience, I went and looked it up while we were talking. If you look at page 2 of Dan's presentation, the speeds that we would get would be 150 to 500 megabits per second. The latency is 20 to 40 milliseconds, which is simply outstanding. The hardware costs $3,170 as opposed to $750, and the monthly service fee is $635 versus $140. All of those are very expensive options, but the option of Starlink Premium is that it's intended for a business like ours, a community like ours, or at least a municipality like ours. And it's available now. If, unlike regular Starlink, if you sign up and pay your money, you get the service. I don't know. I've never seen anything definitive on the number of days, but it is days, as opposed to Starlink, where you can be on there for years.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Starlink is, like I said, I've had some experience with the residential systems. I've been very impressed so far.
Yeah.
Definitely. I'm not aware of what the delivery time is on Premium, and when I looked at the base cost, that was kind of where I left it, because I realized that was going to be quite an expensive endeavor, and I wasn't sure if that was within the purview of...
Well, given our problems in holding Zoom meetings, and we've had extremely severe problems with Zoom by itself, and or just with Internet, I'd suggest that, I mean, the beauty of Starlink is you're not locked in for any period either. You could cancel it the day after you got it. You'd have to at least 1 month, of course. But if fiber becomes available, and I hear all those nice platitudes from the government but don't really believe in it, we could cancel it the day we wanted to get fiber, right, with no issues. Right, all we've got to do is return the hardware, and that's it. So I can get more information from council. The other thing I wanted to bring to council's attention is the mayor of Uxbridge, that recently went through the windstorm damage, wrote or has an extensive article that I think was published on the Star. It doesn't matter where it was published, and he was recommending it to other municipalities because in an emergency situation, they got it up and running, and that was critical in terms of their emergency response. And if we had a similar situation, we'd be in a similar problem where basically all of our infrastructure is dead in the water because we have no power and we have no internet. So with Starlink, they got it up and running. I can share the story with council, share it with, well, indirectly with you, Dan, as well. But
sure.
It's quite convincing, and he was recommending this to other municipalities. So, again, it's a serious cost, but at least that way we would count on having meetings that people can attend virtually, which at the moment, this meeting apparently is an exception. But in the ordinary meetings, I think the last meeting we were at, we had probably 15 to 20 outages during that cycle. That's just from me, you know, I didn't make a number, record the number, but it would certainly be something like that. Mary, do you have any idea how many times in our last meeting that we went?
Yeah, it was probably about 15.
Yeah, so that's a serious problem for us. Anyway, I'll give up.
Hey, I just want to clarify, you say 600 a month?
Yep.
Okay, that's what I thought I heard.
635.
Yeah. Councilor
Kekkonen? Just a little bit of background. February 3rd, 2020, report number T-2020-02A. Council, that year, Council received $474,000 from the Province of Ontario, the Municipal Modernization Grant, purchased software for $23,564. Then in December 8th, 2020, and this was, there was some more safe restart money from the Provincial Safe Restart Program. The township received $198,700, purchased in excess of $98,800 worth of AV equipment in the community center. And council report to McKellar Community, December 8th, 2020. We will continue to try and hold public meetings, but have run into some technical difficulties, which we are trying to correct. September 8th, 2020. February 3rd, 2022, Council passed a resolution getting to the point where we want solutions, we want this corrected. Being open and transparent and involved with our community is fundamental to our moving forward. Not having the systems in place that was purchased, including that this would provide hearing assist and closed captioning. We're sitting here with in excess of $125,000 worth of hardware and cannot function in the modern age. And, you know, what's really surprising is that last summer, July 15th, 2021, we had an exceptional boat launch meeting where there was an excess of 75 people participating online. It was being broadcast out to the parking lot. And, you know, I appreciate all your expertise and the information that you provide, but February 3rd, 2022, Council passed a resolution, and I'm not sure if you received a copy of that resolution requesting, and that one was dealing with the research viable options for improved connectivity to the community center complex. And on April 12th, 2022, Council passed another resolution to review the capabilities of the installed equipment, troubleshoot and provide solutions to resolve current connectivity and audiovisual issues. So Council is in the mindset we want solutions. And the public has, you know, endured and, you know, through the frustration of not being able to connect and attend the council meetings virtually through the COVID pandemic, it's high time that these problems get resolved, and we want some solutions.
Well, no, that's wonderful. Like on the side of some of this has to be researched, and it has taken me time, and I don't know if you're holding me accountable for that per se, because from that perspective, these are not simple solutions, right? Like as far as, and even the more recent offerings from Starlink, who knew whether they were going to work? And I can tell you, I still got a lot more testing to do with them to feel as comfortable as I'd like, but they have very great promise. And if Council wants to spend that money and put that in place, and it seems very reasonable, you're spending a lot of money on the other equipment, seems like a reasonable approach, but I wasn't sure if there was a limitation to that. I'm also looking at your current costs and saying, you know, we're even talking 5-6 times what we're paying now. And was that, you know, was it at all costs, right? And I realize it's not, but in the same sense, I wasn't sure what the direction of Council was in that regard. I know you're looking for solutions. None of these are perfect, and neither even the biggest Starlink will have issues.
I think one of the things maybe we need some answers to is how did the July 15, 2020 meeting go so flawlessly with, you know, that extensive amount of users logging in with audio and visual?
Mm-hmm.
As well, you know, I think, as you know, this sort of, I don't know if it has anything to do with it, but something that needs to be looked into is the cybersecurity aspect of the community, of the township's computer systems, etc., because until recently, the township website said not secure until about a week ago, and then it changed to the HTTPS. So it's been unsecure for, coming up as unsecure for months, if not longer than that.
No. First of all, you're confusing two things. Yeah. And just for clarity purposes, it's very simple to confuse those things. One, the township website doesn't exist inside the township, so let's be very clear about that. Even if the website was not secure, that would have nothing to do with the township. Like, other than that visual information, and you don't capture any financial information, there's nothing on there that if somebody took, that would be a breach of anything. And that's, you know, anything that's posted is going to be your public minutes, it's going to be your public things. Off the other end, unsecure just means whether you actually had a security certificate on there. And the security certificate is more to let the user know that it's a safe site. It isn't a hacker site. It really doesn't affect the security per se. It'd be different if you're conducting financial transactions. That would be entirely different. You're not, you know. So any indication that there's would be any breach at any level, you know, even on there. And I can't speak to that. Your website's with one of the two largest providers in Canada for municipalities. The two companies divide up pretty much probably 90% of the municipalities in Ontario. And, you know, when one's affected, you're all affected.
Okay, that's good. That's reassuring. As a counselor, I'm looking for solutions. You know, this has been ongoing and been quite frustrating for many people. So,
understood. And you know, I'm happy to provide. Obviously, I want to provide you with support and direction in that regard. But it has been, and these are challenging. Like I said, I look at these residential systems, and they're. If we could get commercial services here, that's entirely different. And the one we're talking about with Starlink, that definitely sounds like a good option. Expensive, but probably worth it, like, even in the short term. You know, once the fiber comes, that'll be, like I said, a whole different story. And all of those problems will go away.
With their own vulnerabilities, because it's a physical presence and wires can be torn down, especially in a windstorm.
Fair enough, yes.
Okay, any further questions for Dan? Can we allow questions from the audience at this point in time? It's up to council.
Sure.
Okay. State your name, please.
Mike Richard. You were identified in your introduction as an IT specialist.
Mm-hmm.
And you've given us a chronology here of internet services that I could have scanned from the internet, and that information is widely available.
Sure.
That's not addressing our problem. Have you figured out what our demand is? You're talking about what the services can provide. Mm-hmm. What is our demand? What do we need?
What do you need?
Yeah.
It depends on what your capacity requirements aren't substantial. Your current service is providing your base requirements. If it was reliable, if there was no latency, five and 10 would probably suffice. It would be slow but reliable, right?
Okay, I own a property not far from here.
Yes.
I put up a 40-foot tower.
Mm-hmm.
I have service from Gray Owl Lake mm-hmm. Tower. I get 25 Mbps and 7-up, okay?
Right.
I have never had an interruption in services in almost 4 years. I have recently been upgraded, and they're soon going to turn that tower over to the new format, which will double the capacities and also allow them to give us higher speeds. So that's an interim move. This problem that we have with this system is a hardware and software problem. You haven't spoken about that, because when you read the closed captioning here, are you suggesting that the garble that comes out of that is due to internet speed?
No, not at all.
Then why has not been addressed?
In what way?
In what way? It doesn't work.
Yeah. But they're primarily two providers for all of that technology, right? Like as far as... And so all the front-end solutions, and that isn't us. I believe that's actually Google Translation. I'm not sure who actually provides that particular one.
You're not sure, but you are advising this council and this community on IT. This has been a problem since day one. There is a legal obligation on this council to provide that service to people in this riding. Why are we not addressing them? Why have you not addressed that?
Because IT specialists don't... This is a... You go to somebody who deals with impairments, who deals with... My specialty is not determining visual or hearing impairments. That's not my specialty. IT specialists don't deal with that specifically. There are companies and there are places you can go. Obviously, CNIBC for visual impairments. There are companies who deal with hearing impairments. That kind of thing. What you're talking about is a translate, a text-to-speech translate.
Correct.
I don't write
that. It's got nothing to do with the speed of the internet. So I'm wondering why council has allowed this to go on for a number of years. Have you ever heard this from this gentleman before, what the nature of that problem is?
Yeah, but ultimately, I don't think... Like one portion, as far as the accuracy of that,
it's totally inaccurate.
Yeah. Well, but you're getting there's all sorts of factors that also play into that. One thing I do understand is distance from the mics, the clarity on the mics. But you can throw a lot of money into this, and it, you could put hundreds of thousands more, millions of dollars into this.
Yeah, we could do that. We can do that all day long. But mm-hmm. the ODA, are you familiar with it?
Yes.
All right. It requires that we provide this service for our citizens.
Right.
And we've been looking at this garbage for a number of years.
Right.
So where's the resolution? How is this going to be resolved? It isn't anything to do with the speech. You could tell me about all those companies that are providing different speech. We all know that. I go online and find out any of them. That's not offering us any service.
Well, if it's you're having connectivity issues, if you're having, that's where that speed's going to make the difference. The reliability is going to make a difference. Latency does make a difference.
The Vianet connection that we have
yes.
is probably the worst in the area. Everybody who lives here knows that. And we know what the other options are. People are going to Starlink, which is a good option. I'm on Bell, which is a good option. And there's probably others. We can solve that pretty quickly. That's not a hard thing to do. This is an obligation on this municipality to provide this service, and we're not doing anything.
It's a challenging undertaking. I don't know any municipality. I work with 5 of the 7 municipalities in this area. I don't know any of them who've solved this. The reality is this is a big undertaking, and you can spend a lot of money. Yes, you can probably bring in a specialist. Reality is, though, this is a mix of technology companies. You can go and do reviews and find out who's using it. The company you're using, you've got two companies here who do your audiovisual, and I can't speak to... What I can speak about is they have very good reputations. I'm aware of both companies. They're specialists in their field. They work with courthouses. They work with municipalities. They work with large organizations all over. If the technology is failing here, it's failing there, or it's the same deficiencies.
I also am hard of hearing.
Mm-hmm.
I watch every program on my television
mm-hmm.
via streaming with my Bell Internet.
Right.
Everything is closed captioned. Everything I watch is closed captioned.
Sure.
And I get everything in, translated from a myriad of languages, and it is correct. It isn't rocket science. There is programming available. So we have to see some change to this because this is useless.
Thank you. Any other comments?
Just a follow-up. Did you receive the resolutions from council?
I don't recall seeing them.
Okay.
That doesn't mean I didn't receive them.
Okay.
If somebody sent them, I apologize. I don't recall ever seeing them.
It's that the council attached from McKellar does hereby instruct the clerk administrator designate to immediately arrange an in-person meeting with council and the IT specialist, Dan Hilbert, and a company representative from Michael Enterprises Audio and Visual, which you've met with before,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And provide solutions to resolve current connectivity and audiovisual issues so that, you know, that we can, you know, there might be things that they can see with their system, you know, that they're experts with their system, just to get this moving forward.
Yeah, and I've met with them during the installation, and I'm happy to meet with them again. They're definitely the specialist in that field. That's what their specialty is, right? So we're somewhat reliant on them on what services are provided and, who, and again, who's using what, right?
So, okay, thank you.
Happy. So we have some of the situation. Yes, Mary?
Can I just say something? The Michaels, they were the one who suggested this program for the closed captioning, just to let you know.
That's fine.
But I'm just saying, Dan and I did meet with them, and we did go over into the community center, and we did go through it, and this is the one company they did suggest, and it is called Rev, just to let you know which one we're using.
When did this meeting take place?
The last time we had problems with the camera, I believe it was, Dan and I went over and fixed that issue, so it is working over there at this time.
Everything is working over there.
Yes.
So why are we having the meetings here in the council chambers?
Because we need another resolution of council, or we go by the procedural bylaw. The procedural bylaw says we meet here.
Well, that would be nice to know. Then council could move forward on those kind of.
Well, I think we're trying to fix here, too. We need Dan's aware of that. And I think we've got to deal with Michael's, and we've got to deal with it in this facility to make sure that we can be absolutely open, transparent, and accommodate our citizens. So that's the thing. So I think following up in the resolution, if you hadn't received it, maybe you and I should sit down and follow up on that.
Sure. No, that sounds good.
Councilor Moore?
Am I clear in understanding that the system over there, the closed captioning, and everything works perfect?
No, it no. The closed captioning it doesn't work perfect. It's when we had the July meeting, that's exactly the same system. So it wasn't perfect then either. This is what we get, and this is what the company that installed all of the AV system, this is what they told us to
so
get.
So it's no different over there then. Moving over
no,
there,
it's the same thing. Okay. It's the same thing.
So we need to deal with them. Okay.
Yeah, and I want to be clear, too, that the system you have in place today, you did not, like in here, right? These were purchased prior to your closed captioning. We're utilizing the closed captioning to bring it into here, but it's not necessarily been acoustically tested and all of that. And that will affect, if you heard John Jackson speak, it was actually coming out very well, right?
Yeah.
And there's a variety of reasons why that is. One, he's speaking on the other side, and it's capturing it within the software. That's a software thing. We're taking these mics that were bought historically well before any of that. None of that is filtering directly into there technologically. It's just echoing through that speaker. Everything we're hearing is through that speaker. It's trying to capture that. It's going to get this wrong because, again, a variety of acoustics, a variety of sound, it's bouncing off of walls, and yes, it's going to not be a good, because these two systems were not bought and purchased together. Anyway, I just wanted
to. Nick, last question.
There is a difference between closed captioning and transcripts as well.
Right.
Right, because closed captioning only appears on the screen after it's said and it's disappeared, whereas people are also looking for transcription of the meetings, right? I think in totality. But, I mean, and I know the technology, I don't know exactly how that happens or whatever, but...
They aren't any good either.
No, I know
the
they're not good.
The are gibberish. Yeah.
No, I know. Mr. Zulek showed me at our last meeting, and there's no doubt. But again, there was two distinct needs. One is for people watching the meeting online, or even in the room, I guess, to look at what's being said. But that has a transitory value that's gone as soon as it's off screen. There's also a need for a transcription of the entire meeting. Right, but that's again, that's something that we should address. That's all. So,
the other thing I wanted to suggest, maybe looking at this, is reaching out to other organizations who are doing this and saying, are they getting better results? And if so, how are they? Michael might be able to provide us with some insight into some of their other customers, saying how reliable is that in comparison? Just my thought.
Jennifer, last question.
I was just wondering if the council decided to go to Starlink Premium, would that necessarily fix the closed captioning? From what I understand, it's a different issue. Totally. What would fix the closed captioning that would protect it from bouncing around and garbling the signal? What would it take?
Getting this into the system directly.
What does that? I don't understand that.
Getting the sound from the microphones, right? It's not coming out of the speaker. Think about, like, as far as, I'm pretty sure all it's doing is capturing off the laptop. Is that where it's taking the sound input right now?
I believe so.
Yeah, so you figure that speaker is going, it bounces off that wall, it's going to come back and hit that laptop, you're going to get gibberish. You're going to get...
So what is the physical solution and what is the cost of that?
Those are things we'd have to cost out with. And again, it's not going to be a technical solution. It's going to be technical and audio-visual solution.
And acoustics.
I can't solve that alone. Acoustics, you know, sound experts who can come in and deal with that.
I'm thinking of a better receiver than what Mary has in the computer. Would to amplify the signal before it goes to closed captioning. Is that an option?
One of the things might be an actual mic, like a... That we, you know, a quick solution might be putting a mic outside of there, right? right now it's relying on the mic inside the laptop, which is made for somebody sitting right in front of it. Right, so
totally. So a mic would be a good idea.
Yeah, it would be at least a good start. But it, you know, these are very, very big challenges. Anybody thinking this is simple, show me somebody doing it. Show me somebody, because I'm not aware of anybody doing this well. So
okay, so it sounds like there's going to be some follow up with Dan and Michaels and our clerk and follow up and try and solve the particular problems in here as soon as possible.
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you, Dan.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Did you have any questions?
No.
Okay.